This program is part of Full Service Radio, an internet radio station and podcast network with over 32 weekly shows broadcasting from the lobby of the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. All of our hosts are Washington, D.C. locals, covering stuff like music, arts, culture, identity, politics, and so much more. Visit fullserviceradio.org for all of our programming and enjoy the show. Full Service Radio is also proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
Hi, and welcome to The Leap, coming to you live from the Line Hotel in Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Sarah Gordon. I own a small business, Gordy's Pickle Jar, and one of my favorite things about being a small business owner is talking with and learning from other entrepreneurs. And every Wednesday, I get to have these conversations on air by bringing together small business owners from a wide range of disciplines to share stories, wisdom, tips, and advice. You can listen to the show live every Wednesday at noon or anytime on fullserviceradio.org. On today's show, I'm really excited to chat with Meredith Shepherd from Love & Carrots. Love & Carrots creates beautiful and productive urban gardens. Since 2011, Love & Carrots has helped bring to life over 600 organic gardens in Washington, D.C. and beyond. If you live in the DMV area, chances are you've seen them scattered around the city, plots of beautiful garden space stamped with the words Love & Carrots, in front yards, on the roof decks of some of D.C.'s most popular restaurants, and hopefully soon at the Gordy's HQ. Thanks for coming and joining me today, Meredith.
Thanks, Sarah. It's cool to be here.
Before we get into all things Love & Carrots, I want to talk to you a little bit with you about life before Love & Carrots.
Sure.
So it sounds like you kind of always had a green thumb.
Yeah. You know, I grew up in Vermont, rural Vermont, with my parents, and they always had a vegetable garden, and I was always camping and hiking and just being outdoors. So if I wasn't gardening, you know, I was just active outdoors. So from an early age, I had a really great appreciation for the environment. And those were kind of my first aspirations, were to work in environmental conservation. So that's what I did in college. And right after college, I worked for the World Conservation Union. But, you know, I didn't really feel like I was in the action enough. And I love being outdoors. So I didn't like the office life, like many entrepreneurs say. So after working there for a couple years, I switched to environmental consulting. I was a wetland scientist for a consulting firm. And for that, I was outside. I was doing environmental stuff, but I still really didn't feel like I was doing enough that fulfilled my passions. And in living in the city that was, you know, 2006 to 2008, the local food movement was just kind of taking off. Michael Pollan was putting out cool books like In Defense of Food. And it just seemed like a really great active way to, you know, to be an environmental activist. And because if you think about it, like, we each choose something to eat three times a day. And if you want to make a difference, that's a great way to vote with your dollar. So,
yeah, it gives you the opportunity to make positive change.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, and there's a billion reasons to love food. So, around 2008, I decided to make the switch and get into agriculture. So I just started working on farms, doing whatever I could. And from there, I ended up managing a farm in Virginia,
right?
Mm-hmm. Awesome. In Virginia, I did that for 3 years. And it was really fast-paced learning there because I was growing directly for chefs in D.C., and, you know, chefs are very particular about their produce, so.
Right.
I remember bringing in, you know, boxes of carrots and having a chef tell me that they were too carroty. So I was like, oh my God, what am I going to do with that? So I had to really learn how to dial in my production skills.
So that experience kind of taught you how to plant interesting crops and kind of pay attention to how foods were grown and how to harvest for maximum flavor.
Yeah, exactly. I learned a ton. You know, like adding salt to the soil to make the tomatoes more savory. I really dialed it in. And this is all on a micro scale. The farm was only 2 acres. So,
wow.
Yeah, really tiny.
So while you were there, were you like digging and kind of like, one day I want to...
Yeah, I mean, there was some digging.
Yeah.
There was some digging.
Were you So was it kind of, were you starting to dream about Love and Carrots while you were at working on that farm?
You know, I not exactly Love and Carrots, but I did know after a while that I wanted to make the switch to urban agriculture. I mean, like, it's just even more, like all the stuff I was talking about before, it's even more concentrating, right? Like it's communities and it's even less food miles. Like, I don't know if you know, but food, crops lose their flavor almost immediately after being picked at a rapid rate.
Yeah,
so like asparagus, yeah, asparagus is an example. They lose their flavor by the hour.
Yeah.
So
we know we get the finest pickle when we, you know, when it comes from nearby, local.
Yeah, yeah.
Picked and then it's kind of put in a jar and
yeah we're all sold on that.
Yeah.
So yeah, urban agriculture has so many other benefits. So after Chaley Farm, I was looking for jobs basically in urban ag, and at the time it was, you know, 2010 2011, and there just wasn't much going on. I mean, there were some great projects like Common Good City Farm and the Washington Youth Garden at the Arboretum, but you pretty much had to have some sort of master's in agriculture and, or, you know, to get like an internship with them that was unpaid or something like that. So basically that was kind of the impetus. I wanted to get involved in urban ag, couldn't find any jobs, thinking about what I could do. And I also had a really terrible front yard at the time. And I was trying to garden
in
it.
That was your
experiment. Yeah. Yeah. And it was just really shady, and I couldn't get anything to grow. But my neighbor next door had this big corner lot, and it was all sun. And I kept thinking,
you like knocked on the door, and we're like,
yeah. And well, I never actually knocked on the door; they were never home. But I thought about it all the time, every time I was gardening. And eventually, it dawned on me, like, maybe I could garden in their yard. Maybe they'd let me. Maybe they'd pay me for it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. So
I mean, I think it's absolutely brilliant what you've done with Love and Carrots.
Well, thank
you. So, I mean, you just see kind of like a green space, and you're like,
oh my gosh,
this is what I can do with it. I can't do with it.
I see gardens everywhere.
Yeah.
I'm a fanatic.
Yeah.
Excessive enthusiasm about gardens.
And you know, like, where sunlight comes and goes.
Yeah.
If you could grow something or if you can't grow something, like, in that spot.
Yeah, I actually have a special tool that will tell you exactly how many hours of sunlight you have in a spot. In any spot instantaneously. You can do it any time of day. It's amazing.
That's really awesome.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like what got you to kind of make the leap from the farm to starting Love and Carrots.
Yeah.
So
yeah. My neighbor's yard.
That's awesome. So you formed the company and you got your first client.
Yeah.
It started with like home gardens, right?
Home gardens for sure. I basically have no business background at all. No business school, no business classes. I took like one like free course or something. I didn't even know what a business license was. So when I started, I actually figured out I had to have that a little bit after starting. But yeah, I basically made a flyer. I came up with a name, put out
a flyer.
Which
is a great name.
Thank you. I was sitting in Big Bear thinking about it. Love and care for your garden.
It's awesome.
So I put a flyer around. That was really the first move. And I got a handful of calls, and that was really exciting. So I got my friends together on the weekends and, loaded a bunch of compost into my Subaru. I completely destroyed my car over those first few summers. And, I think the first year I got about 15
I think that's something
gardens.
That you have in common with all entrepreneurs. We all ruin our cars.
Yeah, just totally. I
lugging stuff around. And
yeah.
I guess
yeah.
It depends what industry you're in, but yeah, we definitely did.
Fish emulsion explosions.
Brian all over your backseat.
Oh, God. Yeah.
So was your first client a home garden?
Yeah, it was a home garden in the Palisades.
Awesome.
And it, you know, it took me the better part of the weekend and like four friends helped to put it in, and it was good, you know. It was a good garden, really nice family that had bees and stuff.
So did the family know how to garden, or were they just kind of, they wanted to grow stuff but they didn't have the time? They knew how to garden but they didn't have the time, or they just like wanted to grow stuff and they had no clue how to garden?
I think the family had committed to like a green lifestyle. They had, you know, honeybees and they were catching rainwater at their house, and they'd read about gardening but they didn't really know where to start, and they didn't have a truck and they didn't have, you know, the resources to get it done or the time. So and I knew a lot about growing, and I knew what we needed to do to the soil and what would grow well here. Yeah, I designed a little garden for them and put it in, and then they asked if I could come back and take care of it for them. And maintenance is a big part of Loving Carrots. We come back to each garden every 2 weeks, and we bring in all the supplies that the garden needs to thrive. We produce all of our own transplants in a greenhouse. And that, you know, that was never even part of the original plan. It was just born out of, right. Yeah. So, but now that's a, you know, that's a good 40% of our business. So
that's awesome. Yeah. So you kind of build the gardens, maintain the gardens, and
yeah, we also do coaching, garden coaching.
Oh, right.
So, yeah. So if you want to get better at garden, maybe you've been gardening for a few years or decades, who knows? And, but you want to like take it up a notch, take it to the next professional level, then, you know, we can come for those visits every two weeks at a time that works for the client. And then we teach them in their own garden. So like one-on-one, it's like a one-on-one course in your own garden where you're tackling garden issues as they arrive. So, it's really an intensive learning process, and it works really well. People are, you know, worlds better at what they do in, you know, a season or two. So that's been a really successful program for us.
That's really, really great.
And
So, I mean, how did you go from, I guess, these home clients to, you know, building this like full-fledged business? I mean, you've done 600 gardens in the DC area. You have 15 employees. I mean, this is a big, big leap.
Yeah. Well, so it's been like 7 years, and it wasn't like all
overnight. Yeah, not overnight.
It definitely wasn't overnight. Yeah. But it was, you know, a lot of perseverance and, you know, laser focus, just working 12-hour days.
I mean, and I guess the gardens kind of just they're kind of own advertising. You know, someone sees a pretty garden, Love and Carrot stamps. It's like, oh, I want that in my garden. I want my yard to look like that. You know.
Yeah. No, that's true. I mean, I never had a business plan. I never had a marketing plan. And for the first 5 years, I didn't spend a dime on marketing. And it was helpful to have these gardens. Like, you know, I just put the little signs in the garden, and then people would see them. And, you know, we'd do one house in a neighborhood, and then we'd get calls from four other houses because they just, you know, we know what we're doing. We did the gardens well, and they were beautiful and productive. And so it just spread like wildfire. It was awesome.
Yeah, that's really great. I mean, to, you know, that's like the dream of word spreading, is just kind of have your customer base kind of.
Yeah, you know, yeah, I've been really, yeah. really
And even better to be like, you know, this, my garden's great, but like taste this amazing carrot.
Yeah.
So, you know, you've kind of gotten into doing restaurants. I feel like you do a lot of restaurants now, which is really awesome. And how did you kind of make the transition to that? I mean, I guess you were growing food for chefs at the farm that you worked for before that.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So my agricultural background is in, production vegetable gardening for chefs. So I had that in my back pocket. But it started at Big Bear Cafe, and when I was starting the business,
I love what you did there.
Thank you. When I started the business, I lived right around the corner from Big Bear in 2011, and I kind of just approached Stu and was like, "Hey, you know, your garden's beautiful, but can I make it even better? And you know, I'll do it for coffee." So I just gardened there for free, and he let me put out a sign in exchange, and that was a really, really big difference. That was a turning point for real.
Yeah, I mean,
there's a lot of people go to Big Bear and they saw the sign.
Right. Big Bear is this amazing cafe in D.C. and she totally transformed the outside of the space. Yeah. And they have the vines there, are just like
great vines.
Yeah,
yeah, it's everyone loves it. Everyone loves it. But yeah, that was you know, just put yourself out there, and it was a time risk too. It took me a lot of time. But that, you know, it was a good move, I guess.
Yeah. So then you just started to do, I mean, now you do, you know, Roses Luxury.
Yeah.
Columbia Room.
Columbia,
it's kind of all different, you know, I mean, so is Erin at Roses using kind of like all the produce in the dishes at Roses Luxury?
Yeah. So that's a neat story. We were managing a community garden on the rooftop of the Atlantic Plumbing Building next to the 930 Club. And the community garden aspect wasn't really taking off within the building. I think there weren't as many residents, they thought, as in the beginning. So they wanted us to just plant it with shrubs or something that was more low maintenance. And I said, just like, give me a chance. Let me talk to some chefs and see if I can use this amazing, you know, 500 square foot growing space downtown that's state of the art. And I talked to Aaron Silverman, and he wanted to partner with us. So now we basically grow edible flowers and some herbs up there, and we bring them right to the door of Rose's Luxury and Pineapple and Pearl, and they use them in their dishes.
That's
and
great.
So it's been a great it was a great partnership that was really lucky. Yeah.
And I guess at Columbia Room, do they use the herbs in the cocktails?
Yeah, I think that's you know, there's not as much space there, so it's not really a production garden, but they use the herbs in the right in the cocktails. And yeah, Johnny had some really interesting herb requests that I'd never even heard of. So we got to experiment with some neat plants to grow. And so that's a neat display that people can see what's in their cocktail and what it looks like in live form when it's actually in the ground.
Yeah, that's cool. Mm-hmm. So is there any spaces that you've made kind of that you didn't think could work, but you've made work? I mean, is there a lot of that?
Yeah, a lot of the things that I've learned about growing food over the seasons have been how to make it work, because, you know, a farm field is 12 hours of sun and, you know, you could perfect soil, perfect growing conditions, but the city's obviously definitely not always like that. You've got shadier conditions, you've got, you know, pollution to deal with, foot traffic, a lot of different variables that just aren't there when you're growing in a field. So we've gotten really good at figuring out which crops are going to work well in what spaces. So it's all about optimizing the space that you have. And if it's not perfect, we can still make it like productive and beautiful.
Yeah. I'm just thinking of, you know, me and my wife actually went to look at a space by where Meredith lives, and it's a beautiful backyard, and she didn't really like the backyard, even though it was gorgeous, because there wasn't enough sunshine in the backyard. So that was one of the spaces that you would advise, you know, we could do something with, but it's not ideal.
Yeah. So there's a lot you can do here, but you're not going to have tomatoes back here. So,
right.
Or pickles.
Right.
Not a good pickle garden.
Right. So I guess what advice would you give to someone that's outside of, you know, hey, call up Love and Carrots, that's wanting to like garden?
Yeah, sure. The first thing to do if you're thinking about gardening is to find the sunniest space in your property or growing food. So sometimes you might come home and think that, you know, that side of the house is really sunny because every time you arrive home, it's in the sun. But, you know, on a weekend or something, pay attention to exactly how many hours of sun the different spaces in your property get. And you're looking for at least 6 hours. That's the best. That means that you can grow most things.
Are you like just start with a basil plant in your window?
Yeah. So find that sunny spot, and then the next step is to start with herbs. If you've never grown before, but herbs are really rewarding. You can grow pretty much all you need on one plant. So basil, oregano, marjoram, rosemary, chives. Those are all great starter plants. And then after that, they need sunlight, soil, and water. Don't let them dry out. If it looks like it needs water, if it's wilting, then water it. And then I bet from there, you know, you'll get addicted and you'll want to grow more and more.
Yeah. I'm learning, but I could hardly keep plants alive. So, you know, taking an idea and turning it into a real thing is tough. I mean, it's not easy to do what you did. How did you do it? I mean, I know you've said that it's been 7 years, and mm-hmm. you kind of just naturally, organically have grown this business. But, I mean, you did a little bit more than that.
Yeah. I think for me, part of my success was that I was in the right place at the right time.
Right, yeah.
D.C. is uniquely suited to growing food because there's so much sunlight here. And, it, you know, like I said, like the Pollan's books were coming out, and local food is big. Urban ag was a huge wave that I kind of grabbed a hold of.
Right. And you think DC's got four growing seasons?
Definitely. Five.
Five?
Yeah. Jam them all in there. But, so, you know, outside of just being in the right place, DC, where there's a lot of nice space here for growing and the right time, early on I found some really great people. That was a really key part of my success. And that's a piece of advice I would give.
Yeah, it's everything.
Yeah, if you find somebody that, you know, you work really well with, it's hardworking. They don't necessarily have to have the skills coming in. They just have
you
to be
teach
good.
Them.
Yeah, good, hardworking, motivated people that aren't just clocking in and clocking out. Do whatever you can do to keep a hold of them. And in my case, that was like paying more than I could afford. And, you know, giving people free produce. I would barter with restaurants so that I could give my staff gift cards and then, you know, kind of make them feel like they can go to these restaurants that they normally wouldn't be able to go to.
Right.
Whatever you can do to keep them. And for me, that happened early on. And then in 2014, specifically, I got five amazing people, four of whom were women and three of whom are now my business partners. I gave them equity because... part of my new goals with my company is making careers, like turning urban agriculture into something that people aren't just doing for one or two seasons after college, which is, you know, something a lot of people are trying to do, but, you know, creating long-term careers, because I think it's important enough that people should become experts in it. They should do it for 10 years, 15 years, even 25. And think how awesome
the whole
our cities
life.
Could be. Yeah. Gardens everywhere. Because it's a unique skill. And, the women that work with me are... incredible. I can't say enough about them, and I wouldn't be here without them. So people was the other really important thing for me.
And then you just kind of ran with it.
And then, yeah, it just, you know, each year we did more, we built more and more gardens, we got more and more maintenance clients, and I feel like I was just doing everything that I could to keep up. And, you know, I'm generally okay being a little outside of my comfort zone, so that's that's helpful, because, you know, I take these jobs and I say, you know, we can figure this out. And I've always been honest with clients, like, hey, this is the first time I've done this, but, like, I'm going to give you a break in the price or whatever it takes, like, work with me and learn from those experiences. So that's been key too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you just, I mean, yeah, you just kind of got to dream up a space.
Yeah, yeah.
Anywhere, really. Yeah. I just remember we called, we had her come out to Gordy's to check out our backyard, and we had plans, and we still do have plans of growing things back there,
and you will.
Yeah. Me and Meredith met, and she's like, so what do you, like, you know, what are you thinking? And I was like, I don't know, I just want to, like, grow things. And I had, like, no, zero, like, anything, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Less vision than I was used
yeah,
to.
Yeah. Right. Right. I was like, I just want you to grow things that we put in our jars.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and you did. You came up with, like, an elaborate plan to make that happen.
That we're
which
still
is really
do,
cool.
Yeah. I think.
So. So what does the future look like for Loving Carrots? Let me guess. You want all plants of land around DC to be stamped with Loving Carrots.
Yeah. Everybody should have a garden. Gardens are, like I said, I'm a fanatic, extremely enthusiastic about gardens. You know that you are eating the tastiest food, your lifestyle's better, you're getting exercise. I think it's like 400 calories an hour you burn gardening, something like that. There's some statistic. It's so you're healthier, you're forming relationships with your neighbors, because you're going to have extra Swiss chard to give away and you don't want to throw it out. And you know, your food is more nutritious. Oh, there's so many reasons. So everyone should have a garden, and every space in DC, every rooftop should have a garden. And for Loving Carrots, like I said, my number one goal right now as a business owner, what I think about daily is, you know, how do I make this a career? How do I make this sustainable for the people that are working with me, as they become, you know, they move from their 20s to their 30s and they're thinking about families. So that's on my mind constantly.
And you do that by getting more business.
Yeah. Well, yeah. More business and becoming more efficient and
right.
better at what we do, you know, new program ideas, trying to stay flexible. And,
what are your guys' new program ideas?
So I don't want to give things away. So we're developing a curriculum for schools. We already have a curriculum for homes. We're getting better at tailoring our programming for you know, nonprofit organizations and schools.
That's awesome.
And hospitals, so that, you know, the commitment is right, light, just right. Not everybody has time to spend out in the garden every 2 weeks. So we're trying to come up with schedules and programming ideas that are really engaging for the communities to get the community involved and invested in their
so for schools and hospitals, I mean, is the vision to, like, Well, I mean, I guess at schools is to like have the kids learn about urban agriculture and gardening and growing their own food. But also, would it be for the schools to like use in school lunches?
Potentially, that's not the whole point of it. It's not to, you know, cut down on their food bill or something, but really just the educational piece of it, to connect students with their food and to see, you know, how, what kind of work goes into it, so they appreciate a carrot or whatever
it is. Right.
It's super valuable.
Yeah, but if they worked at the garden and then they had it in their school lunch.
Yeah.
That would be phenomenal, right?
Yeah.
That would,
and a kid that grows a vegetable, like, eats vegetables.
Right.
You know, we come in the first season, they're like, ew, what is that? I don't want it. And then by the end of the summer or the season, these little, you know, 7-year-olds are just grabbing kale right off the plant and munching on it. It's, like, it's a snack. They love it. It's amazing. Another thing we're working on is working with apartment complexes and developments. So we just did a 5,200 square foot urban farm up in Silver Spring at it's called the Pearl.
Cool.
And that's like, you know, the people that live there get access directly to this food. That is production. So we have like 20 shares. It's kind of like, it's modeled after a CSA, community supported agriculture, but it's not exactly that because it's just an amenity that they sign up for. And we're doing, you know, programming with chefs and stuff up there. So I want to do more projects like that where, you know, one big garden where we're reaching a lot more people with it is another goal.
Yeah. So you got your work cut out for you. Mm-hmm. Well, I really love how you share your passion for organic local food by giving people the tools to grow their own. I mean, that's so great.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
there's nothing better than, you know, just, you know, planting a baby pepper plant or whatever it is and then watching it grow and tending to it and then, like, you know, putting it in sauce and eating your own homegrown tomato sauce. There's nothing better to me in the world. Like, I had 4 tomato plants in my own garden this year. I live in Brooklyn and I have a tiny little backyard. I wish it was 5 times as big, but I make it work. So 4 tomato plants, and me and my wife have been eating tomato sauce that we froze all winter long, and we've got more, like, enough to last us to the spring. So
what else are you growing back there?
Oh, tomatillos, leeks, kale, arugula. I did some peppers, like 6 different kinds of peppers. We make tomatillo sauce, salsa out of that, and some garlic. You know, at the end of the season, you usually put down some garlic because that grows over the winter. And garlic is a great crop because if you save some garlic from your own garden and plant it year after year, then in just a few seasons, you have, like, your own variety of garlic. It adapts really quickly to your specific garden. So,
ooh, and everyone could use tons of garlic.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, the more you grow after a few seasons, you just get better at your own habits and your own tastes, and that's both, like, you know, deciding exactly what to plant and what varieties to plant. You know, most people just plant like beefsteak tomatoes in May and zucchini and whatever, and they just kind of sit there and watch it grow and tend to it or whatever. But, you know, now I've decided that, like, I've realized that, like, Valencia tomatoes and all these different heirloom varieties are exactly my favorite kind, and they work really well in my garden. And they work, you know, this type of pepper works really well in my wife's salsa. So, just trying new varieties every year. It's really fun.
What are people, like, in this area kind of most surprised when you're like, you could grow this? Like, are people like, are they shocked at a lot of things, or are they shocked at, like, oh, you could grow peas? Or,
yeah.
You could grow.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, you know, that's probably my favorite part of my job is the first meeting that I have with a new client where we're just talking about what they want to do. And there's so much surprise about what's
they're
possible.
Like, mind-blowing. Yeah.
They're like, what? They're usually just like, so what can we do? I mean, I don't even know. I've done basil on my windowsill, and that was so exciting. My kids love it. You know, can we grow peas? And I'm like, yeah, you can grow peas. And they're like, oh my God, you can grow peas. Some people also don't understand about climate, and they'll say, like, can I grow bananas? And can I grow avocado? And then I have to disappoint them a little bit. But yeah, people are not only surprised by what you can grow, but, like, how much you can fit in a tiny garden in a season. So, like, we do at least, like, 5 to 7 plantings in one little garden bed a year. So in the early spring, we start with spinach and peas and mustards and other greens and alliums, and then you move into like the chards and the brassicas, so kale, and then you interplant that with the carrots and tomatoes, and then those cycle through. So you have all these different layers going on and all these different timings, and you just can really maximize so much produce out of one little bed.
Yeah. So I mean, people are getting like way more than, you know, I mean, they're hiring you for a fee, but they're getting like way more
I mean, it takes the typical home garden, like turns it up to 11, you know. Like I said, like a typical homeowner, I think, will plant maybe, you know, 5 to 10 crops if they're really ambitious in one garden, and they'll do it once in May. And then they kind of tend those crops throughout the season, and then they eventually like kind of peter out. They get a little bored in July, stop watering. But there's just so much more that you can do in a garden. You can have 35 crops in one garden. So that's another thing we bring to the table. That's you know, that's really how you can take it up a notch. People don't know.
We're ready at Gordy's for you.
All right.
When you come in. Well, thanks again so much for coming out, Meredith. I for one can't wait to see more of Love and Garden, Love and Carrots, Love and Gardens, Love and Carrots stamped all around town.
Thanks, Sarah. It's great to be here.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening.